This is a chapter from my novel, A Confederate General from Big Sur. The chapter is called The Rivets in Ecclesiastes. I went up to my cabin. I could hear the ocean below banging against the rocks. I passed the garden. It was covered with fish nets to keep the birds off. As usual, I stumbled over the motorcycle that was beside my bed. The motorcycle was one of Lee Mellon's pets. It was lying there in about 45 parts. A couple of times every week, Lee Mellon would say, "I think I'll put my motorcycle together. It's a $400 motorcycle." He always said that it was a $400 motorcycle, but nothing ever came of it. I lit the lantern and was enclosed within the glass walls of the cabin. My place was furnished like all the other cabins down there. I did not have a table, any chairs, or a bed. I slept on the floor in a sleeping bag and used two white rocks for bookends. I used the engine block of the motorcycle to set the lantern on so I could raise the light to make reading a little more comfortable. The cabin had a very crude wood stove, Lee Mellon's creation, that could warm the place up instantly on a cold night, but the moment you did not put another piece of wood in the stove, the cabin would be plunged right back into the cold. I was, of course, reading Ecclesiastes at night in a very old Bible that had heavy pages. At first I read it over and over again every night, and then I read it once every night, and then I began reading just a few verses every night, and now I was just looking at the punctuation marks. Actually, I was counting them, a chapter every night. I was putting the number of punctuation marks down in a notebook in neat columns. I called the notebook The Punctuation Marks in Ecclesiastes. I thought it was a nice title. I was doing it as a kind of study in engineering. Certainly, before they build a ship, they know how many rivets it takes to hold the ship together and the various sizes of the rivets. I was curious about the number of rivets and the sizes of those rivets in Ecclesiastes, a dark and beautiful ship sailing on our waters.
Number time at the 15 order, 27 cents. Two other digital on just a moment. $249.95.
A summary of my little columns would go something like this. The first chapter of Ecclesiastes has 57 punctuation marks, and they are broken down into 22 commas, 8 semicolons, 8 colons, 2 question marks, and 17 periods.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
The second chapter of Ecclesiastes has 103 punctuation marks, and they are broken down into 45 commas, 12 semicolons, 15 colons, 6 question marks, and 25 periods. The third chapter of Ecclesiastes has 77 punctuation marks, and they are broken down into 33 commas, 21 semicolons, 8 colons, 3 question marks, and 12 periods. The fourth chapter of Ecclesiastes has 58 punctuation marks, and they are broken down into 25 commas, 9 semicolons, 5 colons, 2 question marks, and 17 periods. The fifth chapter of Ecclesiastes has 67 punctuation marks, and they are broken down into 25 commas, 7 semicolons, 15 colons, 3 question marks, and 17 periods. And this is what I was doing by lantern light at Big Sur, and I gained a pleasure and an appreciation by doing this. Personally, I think the Bible gains by reading it with a lantern. I do not think the Bible has ever truly adjusted to electricity. By lantern light, the Bible shows its best. I counted the punctuation marks in Ecclesiastes very carefully so as not to make a mistake, and then I blew the lantern out.
This is a piece by Richard Brautigan called The Mayor of the 20th Century.
It was a hot, dusty day in 1901 when they stretched Mayor Bill. There he was, flopping up there, turning all red, white, and blue, where the flag ought to be. A ring, ring, ring. That's the mayor's phone. I'm the mayor. That's my phone. But I'm not picking it up. I can't pick it up. I got the fiddlers. It's hot here in City Hall. I'm opening the window. Open, open, open.
The mayor is the problem. The
what?
Flagpole is
the answer.
We hung the first one.
We can hang another one.
The mayor is the problem.
I don't want this to become a tradition. It's hotter out here than I thought. I'm closing the window. Close, close, close. I can close windows with my mind, but I can't keep these Elmers from hanging me. Is it worth it? Oh, hell yes. Cost me $20 million a year to get elected. 10 goes into my pocket, and I'm making up the other 10. Ring, ring, ring. That's the mayor's phone. And yeah, the mayor's gonna answer it.
London, on December 1st, 1887, July 7th, August 8th, September 30th, one day in the month of October, and on the 9th of November, 1888, on the 1st of June, the 17th of July, and the 10th of September, 1889, the disguise was perfect. Nobody ever saw him except, of course, the victims. They saw him.
The leader of the white man speaks.
Let's whop them Indians,
he says.
The Indians, of course, having nothing to say.
Don't say nothing.
A typical scene, folks, one which will be repeated thousands of times.
In the thousands of times.
To come.
Except this first one was different.
Why did the first one have to be different? You know, it didn't seem any different at first.
No, one of the soldiers walked over to one of the Indians and throttled him. Well, you could bet this made the folks in the Buckley shoes as proud as punch.
Manifest destiny,
cried the captain of the ship.
That Indian is good and dead,
said the minister's wife.
A dead Indian is good,
cleverly rejoined the captain of the dragoons.
The only good Indian is a dead Indian,
said a little boy.
And they all applauded.
And they were going to let the little boy eat the Indian's heart.
Yum, yum! When someone...
I think it was the minister.
Reminded them that they were all Christian.
And eating the heart of an Indian isn't really something that Christ would do.
Who would have expected? He wore a costume of trout fishing in America. He wore mountains on his elbows and blue jays on the collar of his shirt. Deep water flowed through the lilies that were entwined about his shoelaces. A bullfrog kept croaking in his watch pocket, and the air was filled with the sweet smell of ripe blackberry bushes.
Now those who recite this sutra and then try to put it in practice will accumulate merit as countless as the sands of Arizona and Nevada,
will help save the planet Earth from total oil slick,
will enter the age of harmony of man and nature,
will win the tender love and caresses of men, women, and beasts,
will always have ripe blackberries to eat and a sunny spot under a pine tree to sit at.
He wore trout fishing in America as a costume to hide his own appearance from the world while he performed his deeds of murder in the night. Who would have expected? Nobody. Scotland Yard? Poof! They were always 100 miles away wearing halibut stalker hats, looking under the dusk. Nobody ever found out. Oh, now he's the mayor of the 20th century.
Penis nose.
Did you say penis nose?
Doc.
This is Doc Infirmo at the infirmary.
Yeah, I know.
The wells are poisoned.
Of course they are, Doc. You poisoned them.
Well,
You made me do it.
That's why they elected me. Shiny, shiny water, remember? Ring, ring, ring. Conference call. Penis nose.
Infermo.
Coach SWAT at the field house.
Uh-huh.
Hey, the no-neckers down here growing a foot a day. I'm running out of high tops.
You hormoned them, Coach.
You made me do it.
That's why they re-elected me. Big, big, big. Win, win, win. Ring, ring, ring. Conference call. Penis nose.
Infermo.
SWAT.
Sprawl here. I'm calling from the bottom of another sinkhole, Mayor. A 40-footer.
Where this time?
The new golf course.
Hey, Bill, stick a flag in your ass and call it 19.
Mayor B, you're a genius.
We're all cats in this bag, Sprawl.
Fellow citizens. I want out.
Look, sudden death, Doc. Don't punt in your pants now.
Chipwhacker, sissy, decaf.
Okay, now get an edge, boys. Come this afternoon, they'll be dragging you all down Bill Street at the front of the parade.
Ahead on the poles, boys.
Yeah, swinging high.
What do you say, Doc?
We're doomed.
A razor, a knife, and a ukulele are his favorite instruments. Of course, it would have to be a ukulele. Nobody else would have thought of it, pulled like a plow through the intestines. Isn't he far out?
Yes, he is, baby.
Who's the junkie poet?
Here I am over on the other side.
William Burroughs. He's like Burroughs, but with a lot more positive side to his darkness. You know, he's got another. He's got some light in him. You know.
Right.
And flies buzzing in that.
Here are the sounds of my life in San Francisco.
On off to San Francisco, which was supposed to be, you know, it was hippie haven, okay? Hey, welcome to San Francisco. I thought I was going out there to sleep with an old girlfriend. Turns out I arrive at her apartment, and she's hooked up with Neil Cassidy. So I don't have no chance against Neil Cassidy. I guess he's pretty famous, man. So they were all very sweet to me, and they gave me this apartment on Polk Street. And I look out one morning, and there's Timothy Leary and Allen Ginsberg walking into this acid symposium. I don't think it was called that, but that's what it was. You could see just through the door all of these, you know, crazy squiggly, squishy things being projected up on screens. Remember those days?
Oh, yeah.
And I looked, I watched those people go through, and I said, man, this is so juvenile. Those people are so completely not getting it. I know this is what hit me.
I've been living in San Francisco 13 years. It's my city. I guess it's part of my bone structure, my skin now, part of me. San Francisco's a genetic part of me now. So my blood goes through my veins. San Francisco goes through too. There's a beautiful pace, a lovely feeling to it. You can get around it very fast. It's just a part of me. It's part of my shadow now, part of my breathing. I don't know, I just, there's no why to it anymore. It's just an absolute part of me.
Hungry?
Damn right. I don't know really what I want to have to eat.
I could, we can get some steaks over at Safeway and bring it back here, and you like mushrooms and steaks.
Oh, man,
and,
does that sound good.
And then we can throw a little salad together too, huh?
I'd like that. I'd like some fresh salad and steak and maybe a nice vegetable.
Where the vegetables are green and you can be into the stream.
Right on, right
yes,
on.
We're back from the shadows again.
Vegetable, yeah, we could have some corn or something.
Yeah,
or
that would
whatever,
be good.
Whatever's good.
That would really, yeah, that really sounds good. I need something fresh.
I'm hungry too.
Hey, I know what we could do too. We could do something radical. I know it would probably create some strange.
Give it
mystic,
a try. Let's see. What is
strange
it?
Mystic vibrations in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. We could get a pound of real coffee, and I could make brew up some
real coffee in my kitchen.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
What will I do with the instant coffee?
I don't want it anymore, Dr. Gunderson.
Don't want what, child?
My coffee. The warden says he's tired of my coffee.
Well, it's been pretty clear that your coffee don't got zest appeal.
Zest appeal? What's that?
I don't know.
Oh.
That's the secret ingredient in Herzog Brothers coffee. Yeah, look here. A blend of the finest Brazilian soya bean, Chilean chicory nuts, and Spanish fly.
Oh.
Here, take this can home with you, Katie.
The next morning.
More coffee, Warden.
No, I think I've had enough.
Oh.
Herzog Brothers coffee, the real one. Look for the can in the plain brown can.
Oh, your days will settle back now.
Real coffee?
Yeah, we get some real regular grind speed.
Aha, garlic salt. That's the stuff we're...
Right, there's no substitute under the sun.
For garlic, okay, sorry. No,
garlic salt is all right, but it has bears the same relation to garlic that instant coffee bears to coffee.
Yeah. I don't know, see, I used to make regular coffee all the time.
I don't know what happened to you, Ray Richard. I don't think you have it. You can provide yourself with any kind of excuse.
It's these years of bachelorhood that have done it. Because, this is one thing that's happened. I used to make it... I used to drink a lot more coffee. I used to drink like 4 or 6 cups of coffee.
Yeah, you don't drink much coffee.
Yeah, now I drink
the whole thing.
2 cups of coffee is what I take in the morning, and I take 1 late in the afternoon.
And you don't even care about coffee anymore.
I woke up before Pauline and put on my overalls. A crack of gray sun shone through the window and lay quietly on the floor. I went over and put my foot in it, and then my foot was gray.
Developmental Valley School District luncheon menus for this week. Plain Elementary School. Monday, paper stack, boneless burrito, paste, kitten on a stick, milk-a-roni.
I looked out the window and across the fields and piney woods and the town to the forgotten works. Everything was touched with gray.
Tuesday, white bread on toast, glass of sugar, see-through lettuce, liquid milk.
Cattle grazing in the fields and the roofs of the shacks and the big piles in the forgotten works all looked like dust. The very air itself was gray.
Wednesday, cake sponge, sugar sandwich, butter plate, cloth pudding, milk.
We have an interesting thing with the sun here. It shines a different color every day. No one knows why this is, not even Charlie. We grow the watermelons in different colors the best we can.
Thursday, simple pie, banana splat, sugar mound, blanched cookie, whey.
This is how we do it. Seeds gathered from a gray watermelon, picked on a gray day, and then planted on a gray day, will make more gray watermelons. It is really very simple. The colors of the days and the watermelons go like this.
Friday, diaper surprise, clear peaches, steamed cereal boxes, sugar, milk.
Monday, red watermelons.
And for Mystery Island School for Girls, Monday, soft eggs on a mirror, hard-boiled hollow birds, handful of tacos, milk.
Tuesday, golden watermelons.
Tuesday, rack of clever haunts, whisked apple fly, coronation ham, nylon bunnies, big carton.
Wednesday, gray watermelons.
Wednesday, mystery potato, curd, slippery tart, milk pie, leg salad sandwich, clear liquid.
Thursday, black soundless watermelons.
Thursday, oysters frightened by chickens, liver mounds, nest of interesting spiders, Mai Tai, pack of camels.
Friday, white watermelons.
Friday, breast of clam a la Eddie, wieners in a basket under a blanket, teacher's surprise, milk.
Saturday, blue watermelons.
And for the Ernest Boys Academy, Monday, beef throats, smashed leg, hind quarter, gross livers, old-fashioned milk, cigars.
Sunday, brown watermelons.
Tuesday, flat motor pies, fisherman's regret, loin of fat, stunned ducks in alcohol sauce, milk.
Today would be a day of gray watermelons. I like best tomorrow, the black, soundless watermelon days. When you cut them, they make no noise and taste very sweet.
Wednesday, tart bottoms, slick fritters, breasts of toast, sweetbreads in hand, cuckoo punch, cigars, milk.
They are very good for making things that have no sound. I remember there was a man who used to make clocks from the black soundless watermelons, and his clocks were silent. The man made 6 or 7 of these clocks, and then he died. There is one of the clocks hanging over his grave. It is hanging from the branches of an apple tree and sways in the winds that go up and down the river. It, of course, does not keep time anymore. Pauline woke up while I was putting my shoes on. Hello, she said, rubbing her eyes. You're up. I wonder what time it is. It's about 6. I have to cook breakfast this morning at IDEF, she said.
Thursday, roast puffins, revenge pudding, pancakes in water, baked salad, ring of fire, milk.
Come over here and give me a kiss, and then tell me what you would like for breakfast.
Friday, ducklings a la moron, smothered rodents, closet pie, turbo skeletons, champagne, brandies, cigars, milk.
This is a group of poems from my book, The Pill Versus the Spring Hill Mine Disaster. The first poem is called, All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace.
Well, just stand there, and I'll send Deputy Dan to get you.
That's right, Deputy Dan will find
I'll
us.
Wait
It'll
here
be okay.
And kind of watch you till Dan comes.
Let's go back into the water. This is stupid. All right, look, listen, Chokehead. This is Worker speaking. Hello.
Hi. Open for maintenance alignment.
What have you done?
Good. Now, let me show you something, Bozo. Detailed dress circuits.
Belt. Above, A. Below, B.
Below, B. Okay, close B, close mode.
Oh, my duck, his pants have disappeared. Kid, everybody's watching.
Oh, come on, now, watch this. Ego.
Go.
Close artichoke mode.
It's a rainbow. Oh, now what happened to little Artie?
Prepare shift simulfax for human form. Prepare mirror clone.
What are you doing?
Clone me.
Oh, I think that's against the rules.
Legal entry.
Clone me, Dr. Memory.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm a Clem.
It's you.
No, Barney, I'm me. That's just a hologram.
I like to think, and the sooner the better, of a cybernetic meadow where mammals and computers live together in mutually programming harmony like pure water touching clear sky. I like to think, right now, please, of a cybernetic forest filled with pines and electronics where deer stroll peacefully past computers as if they were flowers with spinning blossoms. I like to think, it has to be, of a cybernetic ecology where we are free of our labors and joined back to nature, returned to our mammal brothers and sisters, and all watched over by machines of loving grace. December 30th. At 1:03 in the morning, a fart smells like a marriage between an avocado and a fish head. I have to get out of bed to write this down without my glasses on.
I need a gas station. Did I pass one?
No, but the fox did. Squeeze him right there. Maybe he'll pass another one.
I'm getting hungry. Hit the dirt! Look out! Was that one of ours? Yeah. Beans. Last of the beans. I'm so tired of Chinese food.
A boat. Oh, beautiful was the werewolf in his evil forest. We took him to the carnival, and he started crying when he saw the Ferris wheel. Electric green and red tears flowed down his furry cheeks. He looked like a boat out on the dark water. Haiku ambulance. A piece of green pepper fell off the wooden salad bowl. So what? Death is a beautiful car parked only for Emmett. Death is a beautiful car parked only to be stolen on a street lined with trees whose branches are like the intestines of an emerald. You hotwire death, get in and drive away like a flag made from 1,000 burning funeral parlors. You have stolen death because you're bored. There's nothing good playing at the movies in San Francisco. You joyride around for a while, listening to the radio, and then abandon death. Walk away and leave death for the police to find.
Give me immortality or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friend, Ralph's Ball Sports here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going out of body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit, and here's how. Lease an organ or limb from our headless body farm. It's made in America from Americans. Enter the new century with these exclusive clone-ons. Napvalor designer jeans, deluxe follicle hair mat grafting with upgraded media-sensitive stimulated wrapper filler, rear roll, non-glossy carbon intensified glutal guards, power moons, and tinted tint grill spoilers in slash dash or faux flannel. So come on down to Ralph's Ball Sports, city of the future, and do it today, because there may not be a tomorrow.
Karma Repair Kit, items 1-4. 1, get enough food to eat and eat it. 2, find a place to sleep where it is quiet and sleep there. 3, reduce intellectual and emotional noise until you arrive at the silence of yourself and listen to it. 4. The next poem is called Crab Cigar. I was watching a lot of crabs eating in the tide pools of the Pacific a few days ago. When I say a lot, I mean hundreds of crabs. They eat like cigars. Widow's Lament. It's not quite cold enough to go borrow some firewood from the neighbors. The Pumpkin Tide. I saw thousands of pumpkins last night come floating in on the tide, bumping up against the rocks and rolling up on the beaches. It must be Halloween in the sea.
This is Phil Proctor.
Hi, this is Peter Bergman.
And we're out here on the streets of Hollywood to talk to you a little bit about Halloween in Hollywood.
I don't know, Phil, if the folks out there on the great American continent realize that here in Hollywood, it's Halloween every day, but this day or this week is Halloween week, and it really means a lot.
Well, I think they do understand that since the first name of Hollywood is Halloween.
Well, we're here at the corner of Faux and Naive, right out in front of the Hollywood Halloween costume shop. We're going to go in and take a look.
Excuse me, Peter. Wasn't this the unisex yogurt parlor just a
yesterday.
Couple of days?
Yesterday. Now it's a mini mall. Now, day before that, Phil, wasn't it Tasty Thai Nail?
Yeah, I think so.
It was all
the
silk
only nails
and sugar
you could
nails.
Bite and really kind of enjoy. Well, let's go inside.
My favorite
see what
fashion
Halloween's going to be like.
Favorite fast food. Okay, let's go inside.
You know, a lot of people in Hollywood actually wear normal clothes on Halloween because they're in costume most of the time.
It's the only way they can stand out.
Oh, look at this, right? Right.
Well, what costume
see,
is this?
Well, already you can see the influence of Saddam Hussein. Excuse me, ma'am. Can I just look at this? The gas masks.
Ooh, well, that's a practical costume, because if you're in the Near East, you know, wearing that, not only are you in costume and ready to trick or treat, so to speak, but if he trick or treats us with the chemical weapons, it could save you.
And look at this. They've got a little skull inside here.
A human skull.
Isn't that,
isn't that something?
Terrible.
That's right. And the Saddam Hussein costume on the wall there, I recognize that was the Arafat costume last year that was so popular, and all they did was shave the beard.
Shave the beard off that mask. That's amazing. There are some camouflage costumes around here somewhere, too, but I can't
find them.
See them.
It says camouflage.
Mm-hmm. Look at this. There's a Steve Martin mask. See,
oh,
I guess
Steve
that's
Martin
a little
mask.
Helmet on his head.
Yeah, and it's got a plug in his mouth.
That
it
down.
Says, this is in honor of the fact that when he went to Saudi Arabia, he couldn't
tell any jokes. So this is not. Look at this. This is looks like a Bob Hope mask.
Well, look what they've done.
Sprayed the hair part white
and
here.
Pulled the wrinkles out of the face.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that something? Now, here is your typical SNL costume on the wall here.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's a very nice suit and very expensive looking.
Very expensive. Mm. And you order it up and somebody else pays the bill.
That's very nice.
That's very nice.
Oh, over here, there is the face of communism. Look at that.
Wow.
And let's see, you take that off.
And what do you see?
It's a mirror. I see myself.
Oh, my. And look, it comes with a little manual, How to Be a Consumer. You get to learn.
A big manual.
It's actually big, yeah.
Oh, I see. It's a manual that actually tells you for money how you can get information on how to be a consumer. Well, that's good.
In Romanian, Czechoslovakian, Yugoslavian, you can learn to say, let's take lunch and call my machine.
Call my machine, but they don't have any yet. Look at over here. This is a night. No, you might want to go in one of these things because you have a political kind of bent, if you forgive the expression. But you still might be able to get in some of these pants. The Congressional Democrat costume there.
That comes with a watering can, Phil. Uh-huh. That's for soaking the rich.
Oh, I guess that explains that gold lame wetsuit hanging next to it with the dollar signs on it.
Well, that's for the rich to prepare for being soaked.
And here
there's the Congressional Republican outfit. Might be good for you. You come from a conservative event.
Looks like a big Maine lobster.
Yeah, what are those pincers for? Those pincer hands.
Pinching the poor, I guess.
Squeezing the poor.
Oh, that's it.
That's real good. Well, and here's the George Bush suit that comes right next to it, and it's padded, I notice. That's protection when you flip-flop.
Flip-flop. Now, this is interesting. If I can get this down and hold it up, this is it says here it's the Exxon suit.
Ooh, it's slippery.
Real slick.
Ooh, that's a slick
And look
suit.
Here, with it comes...
That's a herringbone suit with real herringbones.
Mm-hmm, and a duck in a bucket right there.
Just light it. You got yourself
real.
A tasty crispy.
Real
lunch.
Neat.
Oh, this is right. Here's the Ollie North. Oh, this is old, man. This is an old costume. Ollie North costume.
That's olive drab suit.
It's got padded front for accepting the spears.
Oh, look at the rental on this thing. $25,000 a night.
I wouldn't expect any less.
I don't want that.
I asked the guy, by the way, last year, still, for the Ronald Reagan costume.
Yeah.
Said he'd go get it.
Yeah.
Forgot all about it. I asked him. He didn't remember me. Didn't remember me asking.
Oh, it's sad,
it's really
isn't it?
Really something. Well, Phil, what are you going to go dressed as this Halloween?
Well, I'm actually going to strap myself to my girlfriend's body and go as a living shield.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
Well, I'm going to go as a codependent.
Yeah, what's that like?
Well, I won't be there because my wife can't make it.
Man, with his hat on, he's about 5 inches taller than a taxi cab.
And now, S. Puddin's Sons, makers of rolled-up tobacco products since World War I, invite you to lay back, light one up, and enjoy a satisfying show as Dreamo Cigars presents Maxwell Morgan Crime Cabbie.
It's another rain-soaked Friday night at the Doom Room. One of those quiet little shanties on the Malibu coastline where a fella can finally rest his eyes from the hot glare of passing headlights. The joint's got a piano bar shaped like a 45, lots of nets draped over the walls, and a big fish tank full of mermaids. Just the right kind of atmosphere for the likes of a bruised and battered Maxwell Morgan.
Max! Max Morgan, come on in. Sit down. Say, you look like you had to eat one too many knuckle burgers.
Give me a double shot of the hard sauce and hold the wiseacres, Fergus. Life is a tough case, and another two-bit fare nearly closed the book on mine.
Mm. There you go, Max.
Oh, that's it.
Don't you ever pick up no old ladies on a joyride up to Glendale? Some Hollywood glamour babe out for a swell time in the back seat on some back street, huh?
Well, I gotta say, it's a checkered business, Fergus.
I know you ain't yellow, Max.
Adrenaline Mother. Adrenaline Mother, with your dress of comets.
Do you think of the arrival of the
new... I'm getting old.
Do you think the arrival of the new unexpected comet, which nobody told us about for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Hotek, do you think that has something to do with shedding light on the matters of the world? I mean, am I being too obviously metaphorical?
And one,
no,
and
I don't
two,
think
and
right.
Three, and four.
Hotek, boom, boom, the cleansing comet. Boom, 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 clears the fears. Right from your brain, clears the fears of your brain. Boom, 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 boom. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, we got a quote on that. We were trying to find out some information on Kohotek, and we went and we spoke with the head of the Navy Lavatory.
Admiral Pete Reineck-Zumbacher.
Yes, and what did he say?
No comment.
That is the official position of the Navy Lavatory.
Kohotek, boom, 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 cleansing comet. Boom, 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 send your dreams boom, boom, right down the drain. Boom, 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 boom.
It's quite a comet, you know, coming out.
That's quite a comet on the comet, anyway.
True. Comet looks for fiery tail, right? Sounds like a good headline. Comet with fiery tail approaches Earth. Looks for job. It could be an out-of-work comet. You know, unemployment in deep space, I understand, is a real problem sometimes, right? Asteroid has to draw in belt for tight times. Comets out of work leave galaxy in search of other life forms. Possible. It's entirely possible.
I'm sure if anybody can unionize them, you could.
I think I could. I think I'd talk. Let me talk to the comets in deep space right now. They're listening if they want to, of course. This is a good place to come. Imagine the energy crisis could be solved by having comets come by, like, for the nighttime hours to light the sky. They could come and visit. It's a good place to vacation. Certainly, we're liberalizing our approach towards aliens and other forms. We'd be able to integrate them without trying to blow them up just because, you know, they're so scary and so big.
That's true. There's room for everybody.
Sure. We could start naming them after ladies like we did with hurricanes. We could have Comet Alma and Comet Betty and Comet Celeste and Comet Diane and Comet Edna.
Yeah.
No? Come and get it. You know, it's just another comet. And, or for example, we could stop using commas and start using comets in our sentences.
That's
you know?
A good idea.
You know, like, hello, comet, he said. And then we'd be, you know, or instead of saying cool it, we could say comet.
Yeah.
Right? My man, comet. Right?
Sure. Comet is a commie influence. Well, or a commie influence. Or it's red, a big red in the sky.
Kohotek, it's a Czechoslovakian name, isn't it?
Kohotek, isn't it? Yeah.
You're welcome. He's a Czech.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it could be a communist plot. You know, they'll do anything to distract you away from the fact that their five-year plan isn't working.
And shoes of swift bird wings and shadow of jumping fish, thank you for touching, understanding, and loving my life. Without you, I am dead. San Francisco. This poem was found written on a paper bag by Richard Brodigan in a laundromat in San Francisco. The author is unknown. By accident, you put your money in my machine, number 4. By accident, I put my money in another machine, number 6. On purpose, I put your clothes in the empty machine full of water and no clothes. It was lonely.
The places you go in daily life, in your bachelor life, you know, you go out there and you take care of the laundry. When in Santa Fe, there's a place called Shockey's. Great name for a laundromat, right? Shockey's. Washing with Ava. Oh, I must say, before I get into this. Thank you. All the machines had names on them. Washing with Ava and Gladys and Desi. Warm women wrestling my underwear clean. And Viola, Maria, Jolene, spinning the sheets, rinsing the left behind panties, softening towels. Plenty of permanent press for Indian bambinos, free steamer for such young little mothers. Oh, ladies, I promise to stay with my clothes at all times. To look for lipstick or crayons or, God forbid, plastics, pen, grease, gum, or etc. Fading and bleeding are due to the dyes, not your machines. Send me the woman who'll bleed on my sheets and then help me fold them.
1942. piano tree, play in the dark concert halls of my uncle, 26 years old, dead and homeward bound on a ship from Sitka. His coffin travels like the fingers of Beethoven over a glass of wine. Piano tree, play in the dark concert halls of my uncle, a legend of my childhood, dead, they send him back to Tacoma. At night, his coffin travels like the birds that fly beneath the sea, never touching the sky. Piano tree, play in the dark concert halls of my uncle, take his heart for a lover and take his death for a bed, and send him homeward bound on a ship from Sitka to bury him where I was born. At the California Institute of Technology. I don't care how goddamn smart these guys are, I'm bored. It's been raining like hell all day long, and there's nothing to do. Written January 24th, 1967, while poet in residence at the California Institute of Technology. Xerox candy bar. Ah, you're just a copy of all the candy bars I've ever eaten. Alas, measured perfectly. Saturday, August 25th, 1888, 5:20 p.m. is the name of a photograph of two old women in a front yard beside a white house. One of the women is sitting in a chair with a dog in her lap. The other woman is looking at some flowers. Perhaps the women are happy, but then it is Saturday, August 25th, 1888, 5:21 p.m., and all over. Flowers for those you love. Butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Anybody can get VD, including those you love.
Anybody here want to contact VD?
Look at the prow on that steamer.
That's the kind of big vermin I was telling you about, Tom.
Oh, well, let's climb aboard her.
I'm first.
I'm second, Matt.
Come here, tits.
Are you talking to me?
Here. Come sit on the face of a refined man.
Oh.
Please see a doctor if you think you've got it. You'll feel better afterwards, and so will those you love.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off,
the clapper.
Let you turn things on or off from anywhere in the room. Just plug in the clapper and a television, lamp, stereo, almost anything you want to clap on and off.
Clap on, clap off, clap on, clap off,
the clapper.
Gee, you're so beautiful that it's starting to rain.
Esther was like a kind of wood nymph or sprite, you know. She would flit through the autumnal meadows, backlit with the glowing light of the sun or those huge lights they use when they make movies. I forget what you call them. Anyway, she was just beautiful. Porky Samuelson, the picture director, used to say that Esther was like a metaphor in bloom. No kidding. Nope. No kidding.
Oh, Marcia, I want your long blonde beauty to be taught in high school so kids will learn that God lives like music in the skin and sounds like a sunshine harpsichord. I want high school report cards to look like this. Playing with gentle glass things? A. Computer magic? A. Writing letters to those you love? A. Finding out about fish? A. Marcia's long blonde beauty? A plus.
Opt, served, fuddles. Dear Nabby, darling Nabby, thanks for the pomegranates. Spunky loves them and will be sitting up soon, I hope. As for the excellent porcelain astrolabe, there's an E in there, astrolabe, yes. Which miraculously arrived in precise working condition after its perilous journey round the P. I set it up directly, and having once aligned it upon the celestial doggy, the sight so roused me that I was seized by a transport of scientific rapture, and whilst a happy prisoner of this unhappy state, I fell upon my glorious machine and knocked it perforce out down the kitchen stairs, carrying faithful Spunky, with it. You can imagine my confusion. But quid Malberg in Plano consternation turned to elucidation. Period there. Could this be the solution to our problems, both personal and scientific? Howsoever, a devilishly natural principle of science had revealed itself. Exclamation point. And through my quivering quill, I present it to you thus, quote, if you push something hard enough, it will fall over, end quote. So little did this console poor Spunky that I was compelled to lie on her for it.
Finally, after all 3 weeks of promising, I shall read a Richard Brautigan poem. Oh, real fast, yes. Loud.
Fast and loud. Let's hear it.
I like to think, and the sooner the better, of a cybernetic meadow where mammals and computers live together in mutually programming harmony like pure water touching clear sky. I like to think, right now please, of a cybernetic forest filled with pines and electronics where deer stroll peacefully past computers as if they were flowers with spinning blossoms. I like to think it has to be of a cybernetic ecology where we are free of our labors and joined back to nature, returned to our mammal brothers and sisters, and all watched over.
The She Never Takes Her Watch Off poem for Marcia. Because you always have a clock strapped to your body, it's natural that I should think of you as the correct time. With your long blonde hair at 8:03 and your pulse lightning breasts at 11:17 and your rose meow smile at 5:30, I know I'm right.
Oh boy! Berserko! Berserko!
Bob's Berserko Lounge, that is, under the telephone poles in the exclusive Multimart Shopping Center.
Refuel yourself in an atmosphere of righteous indignation. Meet Cult every Thursday night. Bring a date and dine by the whites of her eyes.
At Bob's, you don't have to leave your loved one in the street. Your car is as welcome as you are. Thousands of empty seats in the back for the lonely set.
You don't have to wear a clock around your neck to know what time it is at Bob's. Meals cooked with real religious fervor.
So don't get a job. Hang out at Bob's.
Take Upholstery Avenue to the corner of 3rd and Furniture. Turn right at the statue of the square round poet, and you're at
Bob's Berserko Lounge. It's weird.
Send to Vasa Watch Company, 163 West Boulevard, Bombay 2.
Hey, tell me, Vasa Watch Company?
Well, Vasa Watch Company, that means water watch, you know.
Water watch.
Water watch, right. It's an old...
Not to be confused with water witch.
Yes, or... to be confused with water witch. Ah. It was a shibboleth that was used by the Aryans in India during the invasion.
Shibboleth,
right.
It's on my side, we say shibboleth.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you see. If the person said Swasa Watch instead of Vata Watch, then they knew that he was from the other side.
The other side of what?
They'd do him out. The other side of Thibboleth.
Oh.
That's why everybody talk like this.
It's different over
there.
That's
because of the humidity.
Yeah.
That's right.
So where the snakes live.
Yeah, if a guy came by and asked him, but what time is it? Then they know that he's from the other side and they do him out.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth.
Of loving grace.
Aw, that's a nice idea.
I like his head.
He is a nice head.
It is a nice head.
Yes.